Hi, I'm Katrina Daniel, and welcome to Primetime Crime, a podcast for people who want to know what goes on behind the scenes of the most notorious trending crime stories and what's going on in the minds of those involved in those stories. What are the detectives, the judges, the defense attorneys, and the prosecutors thinking? You'll hear it all on Primetime Crime, the podcast. I'm Katrina Daniel. This is Primetime Crime, and today's topic, how Julius Jones was on death row for 20 years, his life spared just in the nick of time by Governor Kevin Stitt, mere hours before his execution scheduled in an Oklahoma prison. Jones was a 19-year-old college student when he became the prime suspect in the killing of an Oklahoma businessman, Paul Howell. There have always been questions about Jones's actual guilt, but now his sentence has been commuted. That means he will not be executed for this crime, but unless things change drastically, Jones will still spend his life in prison. My friend, criminal defense attorney Bruce Fleischer, is an expert on death penalty cases. You heard, we all heard this week that Julius Jones, who has been the center of many activists against the death penalty, his sentence was commuted. He was found guilty in the murder of a wealthy Oklahoma businessman in like a robbery, carjacking, mugging.
Yes.
He was scheduled to be executed yesterday and his sentence was commuted. Governor Kevin Stitt of Oklahoma commuted his sentence. Tell me your take on this.
My take is very simple. The governor seemed to be very uncomfortable personally with the death penalty and probably exonerations that have happened over the years due to the strength of very good criminal defense and appellate lawyers and post-conviction lawyers, along with people from the Innocence Project. And he probably had some reservations about that. And I think that that's why he decided to commute the sentence. Now, Jones will still be serving life without parole, but the key here is what he has left post-conviction, if anything, to go back to the courts in Oklahoma. And if he's exhausted those state remedies, can he go into U.S. District Court, federal court, on challenging any constitutional violations that occurred in the Oklahoma state courts? So that gives Jones and his attorneys the opportunities, if they have ground, to go into federal court for this. Now, I'm certain, even though I don't know Oklahoma law, that the statute of limitations is probably run on anything that can happen in Oklahoma, except for newly discovered evidence. Newly discovered evidence does not have a statute of limitations to it. So if newly discovered evidence can be brought before a court to explain to a judge and convince a judge that a judge should look at this conviction and death sentence again, that's the vehicle which is used, and that's newly discovered evidence.
Bruce, give us an example of what newly discovered evidence means.
Perhaps the prosecutor's office hid some reports, hid some witness statements, hid some evidence from the defense that the defense somehow has discovered over the years, or shall we say recently, through their investigation. Or the defense somehow comes up with a witness or witnesses who have information that would exonerate Julius Jones. From what I understand, he had an alibi.
Yeah, his whole question of guilt is somewhat up in the air, although because the victim came from a prominent family, his family is still insisting that Julius Jones is guilty.
Well, you know as well as I do, victims' families want justice, and victims' families want that final sentence meted out when they lose a loved one or loved ones. Defendants' families are always behind the defendants, saying that they didn't get a fair trial, and their son or daughter, their father, their mother, their aunt and uncle are innocent. So those are those two groups that are diametrically opposed in their beliefs.
As we talked before, you've had so many death penalty cases or potential death penalty cases. What have you learned about life on death row from your clients? What's it like?
It is not pleasant.
By way of understatement.
If you are on death row, you are in a single cell in the wing, in the death row wing, and you're waiting for execution. You're also waiting for some word that your conviction may be reversed, that your lawyers are working on things. You know, you're in a very small place, probably in the summertime, it's not air conditioned. In the wintertime, it's not heated properly. And you're by yourself. The only time you're going to get out is for some form of exercise. I know in Florida, even death row inmates get out to exercise with other death row inmates in the yard, or shall we say, with other people. And, you know, I base this on a relationship that I have with a former Florida State prison warden. His name is Ron McAndrew, who testifies in some of our cases as to what goes on in the prison system. He would be someone you would love to talk to in another segment, but you're alone. People, you know, normally you don't get many visitors or maybe any visitors. You know, the prisons make it so difficult for people to come visit people in prison for regular visitation, let alone on death row. You have to, if you're an attorney, you have to contact the institution and say, I need to come up and see my client to discuss legal matters. I just got off the phone with my mitigation expert who just arrived at death row to see three people over the next couple of days. And you're subjected to being searched and strip searched.
Strip searched as well, a lawyer?
The last time I was at Rayford or Stark, and I forget which one it was, and I went to see someone who was doing life, I had to go through the magnetometer and they told me to strip down to my underwear. And I was a lawyer, okay? Wow. They don't trust anybody.
Who's in the room when you're walking around in your underwear?
Several guards who escorted you to the area. You know, you get searched when you go in there, and then when you get to the next, and this was years ago, it might have changed, but when you get to the immediate area where you're going to see your client, they're going, they said, take off everything but your underwear. They wanted to make sure you don't have any contraband, any weapons, you know, any drugs.
Yep. Give understood.
So on and so forth. But I think that death row is such a lonely place. You know, what do you have? You know, the reading materials that you have are limited unless someone sends them to you. They have to be approved by the prison. They screen everything. And, you know, people can go stark raving mad there. They can become incompetent by being on death row. The other thing that's up there is lethal injection.
Yeah.
That is something that's still being litigated in the courts as to what is cruel and unusual punishment. There's a shortage of, shall we say, the chemical cocktail, which is available to create this substance, which is injected into people's bodies. Some people have stopped manufacturing because they know it is for the death penalty. And even though the Supreme Court in a decision a few years ago has said it's not cruel and unusual punishment, it is.
Let me interject here. What if your loved one was the one that was carjacked in the parking lot and mugged and beaten and then shot? That's pretty cruel and unusual too.
I agree with you 100%. That's why in Utah, I still think they have the firing squad. You have to feel for the victims. There are victims' families.
Yes, correct.
Want to be there to see an execution happening.
Do they really?
Yes.
But you see, the trouble with something like that is once you see it, you can't unsee it. You cannot erase that from your mind. So by watching someone be executed, you're basically condemning yourself to that scenery for the rest of your life too.
Yes, you're agreeing to the murder of another human being. That's what it is. But families are entitled to go to these so-called execution ceremonies.
And do they?
They do.
They do?
I've never been involved in a case where I had to go to death row or be involved in any of this. But I do a lot of reading and, you know what goes on there. And then there are other people, victims' families, even though they're against the death penalty, and they make it known, it's out of their hands once there's a conviction and once there's a sentence. And this kind of flows into penalty phase. When you talk about victim impact, what the person who was killed meant to them as a father, a son, a daughter, a wife, a husband, things like that. And victim impact has to be limited to victim impact evidence. That's something that has to be scrutinized. So normally victim impact testimony is in a prepared statement because there's litigation about what can go into it. I'm going to try two cases next year for sure, and victim impact is going to be very important. And it's devastating to families.
Yes, it is. If you're a death row inmate and the fact that you know you're going to be killed, or you've got what, better than a what, 60-40 chance?
I think after a period of 10 to 15 or 20 years, you're eventually going to be executed. You know, what saved hundreds of inmates on Florida's death row was the Hearst decision, Hearst versus Florida, which said that the state courts must follow the federal courts and the verdicts must be unanimous. It's either 12 people for life or 12 people for death. If in a jury of 12, one person says, I will not vote for death, there's no death sentence. It must be unanimous.
That's only in Florida?
Well, Florida has adopted it. Most jurisdictions should have adopted it, but there's also those outliers that don't. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure who's refusing to follow federal law.
Interesting.
So read Hearst, H-U-R-S-T versus Florida.
Okay.
I think the most important thing is, you know, when you read in the newspaper or you see on CNN or the various media stations, the defense is always waiting for that 11th hour reprieve to see if the Court of Appeals or the U.S. Supreme Court is going to halt an execution for a legal reason, okay? I have never been in that position. I have one client on death row who's been on death row for over 20 years. He's my only client on death row. And I believe that sooner or later, he will be executed because he killed a police officer. And it's the agony and it's the tension that the post-conviction lawyers who are filing all these briefs, they go through waiting for the phone to ring, you know, and sometimes it rings and says the stay's been entered, and sometimes it doesn't.
Explain to us what a stay's been entered means.
A stay means that the Court of Appeals is taking another look at that defendant's post-conviction case, and they are issuing a stay, they're issuing a stop to say, this execution will not go forward. We are considering this. You know, sometimes it's a stay for a long time, sometimes it's a stay for a short time, and sometimes the stay just doesn't want to happen. Of course, the governor can step in as well. But normally the governors leave it up to the courts to deal with these issues. Yeah. I think the governor of Illinois had commuted death sentences of everyone on death row in the state of Illinois a couple of years ago. And he didn't get elected again, or maybe he decided not to run again. You know, these are people, there's a lot of sleepless nights. There's a lot of restlessness in your mind, because when you're a defense lawyer, you're always making sure, hoping you dot every I and cross every T, do everything that you can do for your client. And when you eventually get your first night of sleep after that trial, when your head hits the pillow, you can say, I did it all. And if they told me I didn't do it right, I'll see what they have to say. And maybe I'll agree or maybe I'll disagree, but I gave it my all. It's a very, very dedicated profession. And I've taught on a national level in Nevada and in Florida. And there are many, many excellent lawyers, just fabulous lawyers, who won't handle murder cases or won't handle death cases because the stakes are too high and the pressure is too much. And they've told me that. And I say, hey, I respect that. But I've been doing it for so long that it's like there's a rhythm to all this. And do I worry? Of course I do. But I worry about doing the best job possible. The evidence is the evidence, and that's what the jury decides on.
Thanks for listening to Primetime Crime, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Primetime Crime and on Instagram and Twitter at PrimetimeCrime_. Post your comments and tell us what true crime stories you'd like to hear about. Subscribe to Primetime Crime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Thanks a lot.